Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Good afternoon and welcome. Thanks so much for showing up for another edition of Nation Radio. For the next 2 hours, we tell you about Oilers past, present, and future, plus the NHL's biggest stories every week. One of them moving just now, confirmed from Bruce Garriott of the Ottawa Sun. Kyle Turris traded to Ottawa, confirmed. Don't have what the deal exactly looks like right now, but we'll keep you updated on that throughout the afternoon. So some Oiler items are breaking as well. We'll tell you about that in two shakes. Want to pass along our guest list today. Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey, following the World Juniors and the Oilers very closely. We'll talk to him in just a few minutes. David Staples, also from Cult of Hockey. We'll talk to him. Kirk Ludeke from Redline Report. Get an idea about the American World Junior team. And maybe ask a Charlie Coyle question or two. And in hour number two, Cam Moon from the Red Deer Rebels, Terry Jones from the Sun, and Jim Byers, Oklahoma City Barons play-by-play guy. All that and more coming up this afternoon, so a very busy day. Let's get to it. Oilers playing in San Jose tonight in hopes of turning around what was a decidedly mediocre performance in the desert. The lines were shuffled at practice yesterday. They went like this. Nugent Hopkins between Hall and Eberle. They are skating together again. Gagne centering Smith and Hemsky. I like that line. And then it was Horkoff between Belanger and Jones. And that, you know, would no doubt be the checking line and the tough minutes line based on, you know, what I think anyway. Lander and Eager and Hordachuk were the fourth line. Pajarvi has been sent down. We'll talk about that with Jim Byers and others today. Looks like Taylor Fadun is working on rehab, and that's going well. Olivier Waugh has been called up to Oklahoma City from Stockton. There was some speculation that Jan Denis might be recalled, and we also heard that his wife may be giving birth, so we're sort of waiting on that situation. But it's a fluid situation as we start our afternoon together. And I wanted to say hello to our producer today, Mark Mageau. Mark, how are you, man?
I'm fantastic. How are you, Alan?
Very well. You're sitting in for Connor?
Yes. Big shoes to fill.
Well, there's not a lot of rules, really. You don't make eye contact with me because okay. I can go a little crazy. If I'm panicking, just go to a commercial.
Okay.
And don't let me touch the phones in any way.
Deal.
How was your trip? I followed you on Twitter, and you were all over the place.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I just got back from New York. I crammed a lot into a short trip. I went to my first NFL game. I mm-hmm. went to a Rangers game when I was there.
And how are the I know the games because I saw the results, but what are the fans in New York like?
Oh, they're a different breed. The Ranger fans especially, it was the loudest boo I've ever heard. There was a penalty called and they just lost it. And when Dallas made it 1-0, with about 4 minutes to go, they started chanting, "We want Avery." He was a healthy scratch that game.
Did they chant "Pod Van Sucks"?
No, they didn't, unfortunately.
Oh, darn it.
That would have made it perfect.
The only game they didn't do it. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Welcome to the show right now, Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey. How are you, sir?
Hello.
Are you, you're doing a lot of World Junior stuff leading up to the event. Are you going to be covering it all through for the journal?
Well, I'm going to be covering the Edmonton portion of it, and my co writer at the Cult of Hockey, Jonathan Willis, is going to be involved in the Calgary section. And, of course, the powers that be at the NHL decided to put Oiler games directly against all of the Canada games throughout the schedule, which has kind of messed us up a little bit because, of course, we cover the Oilers each and every game as well.
There's a lot of wisdom in that schedule making.
I would have to say there is approximately zero. I'm very disappointed that the NHL wouldn't see fit to notice that the host team, has got some clashes, the host province, and yet the Oilers are playing on the 26th, the 29th, the 31st, the 2nd, the 3rd, the 5th, all the days of the key games of the World Junior.
That's so interesting. You know,
that is going to mean PVRs and choices and remote controls for Oiler and Canada fans, of which, of course, there's a lot of people who are both.
Yeah, it's that old word snafu, which we can't, you know, we can only say snafu, but it sounds like a little bit of a mix-up, no doubt, right?
Well, it's just kind of thoughtless, which unfortunately NHL got NHL fingerprints all over it.
So, well, you know, because you're covering so much, I'm going to go around the bend here with you. We'll
sure.
start with the World Juniors. I got two questions from Cameron off the hop here. He asks, lots of interesting cuts from Canada's World Junior team, McNeil, Toffoli, Murphy, Buns. Who was the biggest surprise cut for you?
Well, the biggest disappointment cut for me certainly was Buns. He was the lone Oiler candidate on the team. And by my view, he was probably the top goalie going into camp. Vizintin, because he was a returnee, it seemed like he, I don't know if he got special treatment or if he was just that good in camp, but he certainly hasn't had that impressive of a year. And he didn't have that impressive of a finish to last year's World Junior that he should be an automatic choice by any means. I think they should have gone with the best two. And I've seen a lot of Buns, and he's consistently impressive. Good stopper, good puck handler, stand-up kid. And I was looking forward to seeing him in the Red Maple Leaf, but I guess it's not to be, and I'm sure he's pretty crushed by it.
Well, he's played well since going back. One thing I don't understand, Bruce, is, and I know that they don't exclusively put all the importance on the very short training camp, and I think it's 3 or 4 days, but especially with regard to goaltending, isn't a longer database, more games played in CHL, wouldn't that be a better reflection of the player's current performance than a very short series?
Well, I think with goalies, the impression I get is they're really anxious to see how do these guys perform in the pressure cooker. And it doesn't get much more pressure-packed than a couple of red and white games and then the traditional game that they play at the end against usually CIS competition, where they put two goalies on each team. And Buns had the misfortune of playing for Canada against the University of Calgary / Lethbridge combined team. And it was a pretty one-sided game, and he faced 6 shots, and I guess 2 of them went in, and I guess 1 was a deflection. I didn't actually see the game, so can't really comment on it. But it's easier, really, for the kid like Wedgwood, who got to play against Canada and saw a whole bunch of pucks in his 30 minutes of action, to either A, make a good impression, or B, recover from maybe a bad goal against with some subsequent play. But Buns, unfortunately, it was kind of the perfect storm,
yeah,
where he got, you know, very little action. And you know how difficult that is for a goalie generally. 6 shots in 30 minutes is not uncommon for 1 or 2 of them to beat him.
What do you? How do you handicap this World Juniors? I was surprised by some of the selections, and I heard Bob McKenzie talking about Denholm not making the team. Still, Canada has to be one of the favorites going in. I've heard the Russians are strong. The Americans are always interesting. How do you handicap this tournament before it starts?
Well, I always put Canada as at least a co-favorite every year, and that's sight unseen, and that's even in the years where they've turned over the entire team and not brought a single player back. It happened a few years ago, and everybody was surprised when they won the gold medal, but I wasn't surprised because they just have such a depth, or we have such a depth of talent in this country. It's kind of like, you know, the University of Alberta Golden Bears have a similar thing, that even when they turn the team over, you know, there's always stock in the cupboards with new talent that's going to make the team very, very competitive at the very least. So I'm, as always, reasonably confident in Canada. And that said, I don't think this is a particularly strong version of Team Canada, but that's still good enough to compete most years.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know a whole lot about the current Russian team. I saw a little bit of the Russian Selects Super Series against the CHL squads. But I'm not into prognostication all that much anyway. It's not really my forte, as you know from our last interview. I'm just more interested in watching the games and analyzing what happens. Once we actually get to see the teams, we get a lot better idea of how they stack up.
Okay, well, then let's switch gears to the Edmonton Oilers. We've got a Kyle Turris trade ongoing, so I may ask your opinion once we find out what's coming back the other way. He's on his way to Ottawa, if you haven't heard.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
What do you make of the, and I know that a lot of people have talked about this since it's happened, but what do you make of the Magnus Pajärvi demotion and the timing of the demotion?
Well, the timing's a little bit funky. I know some people have been saying for a month he should be going down, and other people have been saying that he should go on the first line and be given an opportunity, or at least in the top 6, be given an opportunity to spend some time with some quality line mates. And other people have been saying he should switch to center, and other people have been saying he should switch to defense. And there's no shortage of opinions about what the Oilers should do with Magnus Pajärvi. I'm disappointed in his season to date, and I'm expecting a lot more out of this guy, and I still am expecting a lot more. I think it's probably a necessary step at this point because he's been spinning his wheels, and when he does get in there, he just hasn't been creating much offense, and he doesn't really hurt the team, but I don't see him developing in the current situation. So maybe just whatever is going to shake him up and get him going, and this could well be just the ticket. Certainly, they need to do something different.
What do you think? And I always think of this season so far as the first 15 games, which were wildly successful, and then the winter of our discontent games, and mm-hmm. those are the last 16. I mean, some pretty smart people had this team in the playoffs, Bruce.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
No problem. So, is this a team that we're just seeing the reality and the save percentages were the luck was rolling sevens every game, and now it's come home to roost? Or can this team save itself a little bit when everybody comes back from injury?
Well, they mostly are back from injury. I mean, you look at that top nine that Oilers put out in Phoenix the other night, and that's a group that should be able to compete. And the fact was that they didn't. And that's very concerning and even upsetting to Oilers fans who've watched our team be not very competitive for way too long. To see a few games like that, the Carolina game was another dreadful example where the Oilers were rested, the other guys were tired, and they came in and ran our show, as Dennis would put it. And Phoenix did the same thing. And when you see games like that, it's very easy to get discouraged. And I was discouraged basically all day yesterday. And I do see upside with the team, but I'm starting to feel a whole lot less confident that we're going to be seeing a whole lot of that this season, at least in terms of the end of season results.
You know, this is discouraging to me because you're a little older than me, and I thought someday I would be mature enough not to get down for an entire day based on an Oilers loss, but it sounds like there's no hope for that.
Well, not when they deliver a stinker. I mean, they were outshot by Phoenix, tired Phoenix, flying home from Anaheim at even strength, 41-15, for goodness sake.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So I think the Oilers fans can expect tonight a better effort, but
yep.
the team they're playing, you know, I saw them the other night, and they were down 2-0 and looking dead, and the color guy was talking about, you know, maybe McClellan's job is in jeopardy, and zing, there's four goals in the net.
Right. So
they're a tough team to beat.
Yeah, no, I mean, San Jose has given Oilers a ton of trouble over the years. The only time we've ever won any games in San Jose since the playoff series, where we won that key game five there in 2006. Other than that, if Dwayne Roloson makes 50 saves, we have a chance. And otherwise, that's a team that's, I mean, they have most Western Conference teams' numbers. It's just a different caliber of team altogether. And unfortunately, with the current state of our Oilers' defense, it's not looking good to take on a powerhouse team like Joe Thornton's squad.
Okay, I want your opinion on this, and I know this is on the fly and unfair, but I'm going to do it anyway, Bruce. Here's the deal.
Sure.
This is from John Shannon at Sportsnet. Turris now a senator for young Swede defender David Rundblad and a second-round pick. Your thoughts?
Boy, Rundblad's pretty good. And a pick?
Yeah, and a second.
I think Phoenix won that trade.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not a big fan of Turris. He hasn't done... I mean, he was a real hotshot when he was picked third overall, and they were talking about how good he was in the BCHL, but that's Tier 2 Junior, or Junior A, or whatever they call it these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen little flashes of him at the pros, but nothing... like even a whole game of being a game star or looking like any sort of a serious player compared to other prospects drafted same time. And Rundblad, haven't seen a whole lot of him, but what I have seen has impressed me. Boy, that would be I would view that originally as being a bit of a steal for the Coyotes,
especially because, and I know this is fan specific, but as an Oiler fan, a guy like David Rundblad would be a really nice pickup for a team like Edmonton.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we as fans are probably acutely aware of what a puck moving defenseman means to a team that doesn't have enough of them who
mm-hmm.
can also play defense. So,
yeah, that's for sure.
Now, the game the other night, Taylor Hall comes back, scores two goals on the power play, and he has the nose for the net and where to be. He's just a terrific player around the net. That's got to be an encouraging sign for Oiler fans.
Well, of course, and I mean, Taylor's injury certainly hurt the cause pretty badly during that tailspin. They were officially, I think, 2-4-1 while he was out, but of course he went out early in the Colorado game, and they let that one get away from them as well. And they had a lot of poor games in there, and Hull provides a spark to the team and the ability to just produce sort of instant offense that makes the other team's job a whole lot easier when they don't have to worry about that. And then they can really focus on shutting down some of the other young snipers without the balance. Hull provides much more scoring balance, at least in theory, Phoenix game notwithstanding, that the Oilers should have two and I think three lines that are capable of putting the puck in the net.
There's a story that's been slowly evolving this week with regard to Habib Boulin's health and the concern that we have because he's played so well. And Devan Dubnyk, a fine young goaltender who's struggled a little bit. Word today that the ECHL Stockton team sent Olivier Waugh up to Oklahoma City.
Uh-oh.
Initially, that's exactly right. Initially, there's that feeling. Now we hear that apparently Denise's wife is going to give birth, so maybe it's not that. But, you know, Bruce, the idea that Habib Boulin being hurt would have such an enormous impact on Oilers fans. That's a big story this year because entering the season, I think most people thought if you could trade Habib Boulin for a load of hay, that'd be a good deal.
Yeah, well, people saw both years he never made it through November without getting hurt. Last year he came back, but he was terrible. The whole back half of the season, he won like two of his last 25 starts or something like that. I kind of expected him to bounce back somewhat this year. Was pleasantly surprised with how good he was out of the gate, and at the same time, I'm kind of quite nonplussed actually with Dubnyk's season, where in my view he hasn't played two good games back to back the entire season, and he's had an awful lot of games of 4 or 5, even 6 goals against. They sort of sprinkle in every other game that he started. So he's really had trouble getting traction and gaining any consistency. Habib Boulin's come down to earth somewhat. And, there's no way you're keeping up a .950 save percentage on any team, let alone this one. And obviously that had to be corrected. But he was something like .928 in his last 5 games, mm-hmm. which is still pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And he's been, he's certainly been their number one goalie this year. And I think that's a surprise on two fronts, only one of which is pleasant.
Yeah, for sure. Final one, Colton Tubert got sent out. A lot of people, and I mean a lot of people I talked to, felt that he was a guy who should have been kept and possibly someone else sent out, Theo Pekham getting named most often. But the one thing I think we can all agree on is that Colton Tubert showed very well when he's played here in Edmonton.
Yeah, he's got potential. I think he has a couple of issues. One with his decision making that caused him some grief, especially the last couple games. I didn't think he played as well as he did earlier in his call-ups. And of course, he's still a young player, and I think the whole development program for these guys, sometimes we have to take a step back and say, well, what was the goal going into this year? And the goal was, well, give them most of a year in the AHL and give them a couple of cups of coffee in the NHL, and that's a good development year. And he's already had the 2 cups of coffee, and he may yet get another one or two, of course, because he's still the top option to call up from OKC. But he's slightly ahead of the curve to be here, and sometimes he gets exposed for that.
Yeah.
At the same time, a guy like Teddy Pekman, if you tried to send him down, you have to expose him on waivers. And the Oilers discovered earlier this year with the Taylor Chorney situation that's maybe easier said than done. And they're so thin on the back end that they just can't possibly afford to post a defenseman on the waiver wire that they could lose.
Yeah, no, I agree absolutely. And the one thing we know about defensemen is you can never have enough of them, right?
Well, yeah, we went from holy mackerel, we got a lot of defensemen, to holy mackerel, we don't have very many. We've only got Tubert and Chorney that are in OKC that they are even under NHL contract. And the guys that are up here, even with Corey Potter being back, I'm anxious to see whether we've gotten the good Potter or the bad Potter from the first 10 games or the second 10 kind of thing.
Right.
If we get the guy that started the season and was red hot there for a while, that goes a long way to bringing that second pairing up to snuff, which as of now, there's really only one defense pairing, Gilbert and Smead, that the Oilers fans can count on for a consistently solid performance.
Bruce, thanks for this.
Okay, you're very welcome.
All right, Bruce McCurdy will be covering the World Juniors and Oilers throughout the Christmas season. Going to be a very busy time for everybody over at Cult of Hockey, as it will for everyone. And we thank him for coming on today. And just to pass along again the deal, Phoenix trades Kyle Turris to Ottawa for very fine young defenseman David Runblad and a second-round pick. Don't know what year that is, but one assumes it's the 2012, unless noted. It's 4-0 Boston in the second period now. Zdeno Chara killing everything, and Milan Lucic doing the same. Both have goals. Benoit Pouliot and Daniel Paille have also scored. We'll keep you updated on that and more. And this is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
12:27, we're around until 2 o'clock today, and later on this hour, Kirk Ludicky from Redline Report. We'll talk a little bit about the American World Junior team and the World Juniors in general with Kirk and a few of the 2012 eligibles and how they're doing, too. If you haven't heard, the Coyotes and the tourist drama, they traded the centerman to Ottawa for David Rundlett in a second. Jacques Martin is fired as coach of the Montreal Canadiens, and Timu Solani is in Winnipeg tonight with the Ducks, and that's going to be some kind of celebration. In the Boston-Philly game, 4-0 Boston, they're just ripping it up, and another injury, Giroux gone, Pronger gone, and now Sean Couturier, I guess it was a slap shot to the temple, out with a head injury and won't be back today. The Philadelphia Flyers, honestly, born under bad sign or something going on with the Flyers this season. Lots and lots of injuries. Had an opportunity to talk to David Staples from the Cult of Hockey about the first portion of the Oilers season and how it went, and a few things about Aleš Hemský as well. Here's that interview. David, let's start with the Oilers. They started so well, lots of home games, crazy goaltending, the kids doing great, and of course then the inevitable fall off. Was this inevitable? Did this have to happen?
It's hard to know. I mean, I thought that the Oilers could be really I didn't think they were going to make the playoffs this year. Because for that to happen, the Oilers would not only have to improve a lot, but a whole lot of other teams would have to get worse at the same time. So the chances of both of those things happening were small, but there was a real chance that the Oilers could get quite a bit better this year, and initially they were quite a bit better. So I tracked scoring chances, and for the first 14 games, the Oilers were even in scoring chances with other teams.
Mm-hmm.
They had 18 chances a game, and the opposition had 18 chances a game. Since then, in the 17 games since then, the Oilers have had 16 chances a game, so they're down 2 a game, and the opposition have had 21 chances a game, so they're up 3. So in the last 17 games, the Oilers have been, you know, the spread has increased to a difference of 5 scoring chances a game, which is really a lot of scoring chances. And it's both on offense and defense. They're getting less chances, and they're giving up more. So something fell apart. The wheels fell off.
So but before we go any farther, can you really briefly define a scoring chance by your metric?
You know, I have a real tight definition. There's a scoring chance zone, and it's, you know, from right beside the net out to the dots, the face-off dots, to the top of the circles. And then in the center of the ice, it kind of circles out a little bit to take in a little bit more of the upper part of the slot there, from the top of the circle. So basically the slot area.
Right.
So it's a hard shot on net, not just a dribbler, a hard shot on net that hits the net from the slot. Now, that's my definition. There are a few exceptions now and then. Like if a guy's on a breakaway and he's trying to pick a corner and there's nothing between him and the goalie and he just misses, I will count that as a scoring chance. And if there's a screaming hard shot from the point that hits the net and is screened by Ryan Smith or Ryan Jones, I will also count that. Those plays are very rare, actually, in a game. They might happen once a game that there's something outside the hardcore definition of a scoring chance that's counted.
So basically, for the old-timey guys like me, the Phil Esposito zone and then about 2 feet behind that, that's the heart of it.
In the middle of the ice, yeah. You back out in a bit of a circle shape in the middle of the ice to include the kind of the upper slot. If you look at kind of heat graphs of where goals are scored from in the NHL, a lot of goals are scored from that area, which is why I started to include it at the start of this year. And I also believe that the that meets the several NHL teams' definition of the scoring chance zone as well.
My fallback position was the goaltending was always going to go down because the save percentage were so high. I felt the kid, Nugent Hopkins, would fall off on the power play. And I really did think that the veterans were being run, and I include Smith and Horkoff and Habibulin, a little hard in the early part of the season. What surprised me in the first part of the season, though, was the strength of the defense. And we know that there were injuries and suspensions. How big an impact were that? Because early on in the season, when they were going well, that defense was playing well. How big an impact were the injuries and suspensions on the blue line?
I honestly think it's 80 to 90% of the story of what's gone wrong here. Ryan Whitney, he was out at the start of the year. When he came back, I think he played four games, and he looked like he was back to his old self. He got hurt. That is a huge hole. And since he's been back, except for last night's game, he's been terrible. He's really been atrocious. He's been playing like Curtis Foster did last year. You know, this kind of very immobile defenseman who doesn't move, gets beat a lot, beat to the puck. So that's, we can't have that. The Oilers cannot have that from Ryan Whitney if they're going to be a competing team. So huge hole right there. Sutton, he seems to be a decent hockey player. He keeps getting suspended and being injured. So there's another huge hole. And I think that and Potter, who was playing so well, and I love it when the Oilers pick up a defenseman about 26, 27, 28. I think that's when defensemen in the NHL are finally ready to start playing well defensively, because it's a thinking man's position. And so he was playing very, very well. So you know what? I saw some hopeful signs, actually. They got trounced last night, actually, in Phoenix. If you look at scoring chances, it was 20-9, but Whitney and Potter both played fairly well, I thought.
I think the other thing, and you mentioned injury, and I know NHL teams are never going to give us info, but based on the way he played a year ago, when he was exposed but played fairly well, often with Tom Gilbert, and the way he's playing right now, I don't want to say Theo Pekham is hurt, but he's off his game based on previous levels. Is this a guy who might have to sit in the press box for a while until he gets his game back?
If Sutton was around, Pekham wouldn't be playing, I don't think. He'd be the seventh defenseman. He isn't playing well this year, is he? And I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
He was better last year.
Yeah, I agree.
He was, especially at the start, the first half of last year, he was quite strong. And then he kind of tailed off. And I don't know, like, he is a young defenseman. I don't know how strong his mental game is. I mean, he makes the last night on a goal against. He goes for the big hit, and he's right out of position on the play, and they go in and score.
Yeah,
this is the Theo Pekham kind of play. He just doesn't read the game very well. So that's something that's going to come along in two or three years. And I like his game quite a bit because he's so tough, and I think they need that toughness. He is also strong passing the puck. And I think he will figure out the defensive side, the positioning side of the game, like they all seem to do around the age of 26, 27. Whether his conditioning will ever be strong enough, that's another question, though.
Yeah, it's a good point. I know that defensemen, and I'll pick Ladislav Smead because he was a guy that I was down on forever, and Ladislav Smead is playing great hockey. I mean, I thank God every day that they didn't trade him like I suggested 1,000 times. But along with he and Gilbert, if Whitney comes around and perhaps a Potter, is there enough there for the Oilers? Now, I don't mean going into the summer because I think they'll look for defensemen, but is there enough there to make a push for the playoffs, or do you think they need to add a defenseman here at the deadline if they're going to push for the playoffs?
Push for the playoffs this year. I don't think it's the right strategy to making any kind of short-term move for the Oilers this year. You know, the last couple of years they suffered when they lost players. They decided, I think consciously, that they weren't going to replace them, like bring in a goalie to replace Habibulin when he got hurt. And I don't think they should do anything this year with the short-term goal. They should just, because making the playoffs is a long shot anyway. Yeah, they should try to win, but win with the ones that they have. Develop these young guys. Play Petrie, play Pekham, you know, give them the ice time because they are capable of playing in the NHL. So, no, I don't want to see anything like that. Now, that said, there's going to be a time, maybe not this summer, but or maybe the summer after, where you see a lot of teams, when they do start making that big push for the playoffs, they go for that great defenseman. And I think that should be the strategy of the Oilers, is not to try to draft that great defenseman, that, you know, the Pronger defenseman that we got in 2005, but to make a trade for that kind of defenseman at the right moment. Mm-hmm. So, there are players that Shea Weber, his contract's coming up. There's other players. And when the time is right in Edmonton, they will want to play here on a reasonable contract, not an overpay, when this team has a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And that's coming, we will all hope, you know, the window's probably about 2 years from now, I'd say, for that kind of deal.
There's a couple things that are going to happen before that two-year period, as you put it, for the defenseman. One of them is making a decision on Alex Hemsky, which may come as soon as the deadline. I'm a big-time Alex Hemsky fan,
yeah. But
he looks like a shadow of himself, his former self, right now. What's the problem, number one, and is his value enough to trade him, number two?
He is a tremendous hockey player, I agree with you, but I think it's the injury. I think it's the shoulder. I think it's either still hurting him or psychologically holding him back. He's just not going for it. You know, I track scoring chances, and I break down the plays to see who's involved in the chance and who isn't involved. So when I'm looking at Hemsky's numbers, his offense and defense aren't that far off from last year in terms of creating scoring chances on the attack. He's still involved in scoring chance plays, but he's not cashing in. And it's my belief that it's not just luck, that he's not just having bad luck here. There's something missing in that moment of attack, in that, you know, he's right at the sharp end of the attack all the time.
Yeah.
And at that moment this year, something's, his nerve, his confidence, it's just not there. And he's not making that skilled play under pressure that we saw from him repeatedly in years past, where he just amazes us at the last second and a goal results. And that's not there in his game right now. And I think that's going to come back for Alex Hemsky. I'm a believer in this player. I think he's a very good hockey player. I hope they sign him.
Yeah, I agree. But
more than his demands. I think it's all about him being reasonable, though. And if he's not reasonable, he's got to go.
Well, one of the things that has happened to Hemsky, and it's a good thing, bad thing, is that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, a rookie, which is very rare, is impacting the power play in an enormous way, and really everything runs through him. I'm thinking about the goal against Phoenix where everybody is passing the puck slowly. Nugent-Hopkins made a quick pass to Hall. About 2 seconds later, the puck's in the net. He just has a feel for it. Is Nugent-Hopkins' emergence, does that make Hemsky less valuable on the Oilers?
He's less vital to the future of the team. And that should be reflected in his contract. So should his injury history. You know, I think that probably the best tactic with Hemsky would probably be to sign him to a 1 or 2 year contract,
mm-hmm.
just on a reasonable term, and see how it turns out. See if he wants to keep playing with these guys. See how he fits in. This is the first time he's ever played with players who I would argue with a player who is more talented than he is, and also plays the game, thinks the game at a better level than Hemsky does. Hopkins moves the puck rapidly, like the really true elite players do, and this has always been a problem for Hemsky as he holds it too long.
Yeah.
So it might be thrilling for him, though, to play alongside a player like that. And with Hall, he always seems like he's got an extra jump in his stride when he's out there with Taylor Hall. I like that combination. I think Hemsky's always needed other players he can trust more,
yeah.
So he's willing to give up the puck. And he's always been a soloist, so he's got to shed that soloist stuff. And I think he was shedding it at the start of last year before he got hurt. I thought he was moving the puck more quickly and rapidly. So I think that's in him, and I think he wants to win. So I think, you know, the short-term contract may be the thing that will work for him and for the Oilers.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that 1 or 2 years and a good price, but not a crazy price, and then they can make a decision after that as the young players start to get paid. He may not be affordable at that time. What do you think about the fourth line? I know Coach Rennie likes to run them out there in the third period, and it cost last night against Phoenix. They were in their own zone for the entire time. I'm of the opinion that Lander might need to spend some time in Oklahoma City and that Pajarvi definitely does. Would you agree with that?
Well, we'll start with Lander. I think that it certainly wouldn't hurt Lander. Again, he's playing a tough defensive position, center. He's not getting scorched a lot, but I just think his confidence would go up if he was able to play in Oklahoma City as well. I didn't mind Vandevelde's game last year.
Yeah.
He was up for a short amount of time. And And O'Mara has no offense, but he brings something to the team as well. He's tough. He's got that crazy hockey hair. That's got to count for something. he looks like he can kill penalties. He's willing to play small minutes a game. So yeah, I wouldn't be. I think it might not be a bad idea to send Lander down. As for Pjärvi, I really do think that it's a case of bad luck. He is putting up as many chances and playing as sound defensively as he was last year. He's just not scoring. It seems like he just needs to score a couple games in a row, and yeah, he'll be off.
Well, he's got to get rid of the sideburns, and then I think he'll be fine. The final question I have for you, and this is one that I thought of just as we were talking, but one of the things about the Oilers that I had really stressed in the last couple of weeks was they were flat on back-to-backs. And I thought, you know what, if they face another team on a back-to-back, surely they'll be the better team. And against Phoenix, in that same situation where the Coyotes were back-to-back, the Oilers were the team that were flat. What's going on? I think they're a good young group. Why do they seem to be flat sometimes, like they have in a few games over this losing streak or poor performance streak?
I don't know. You know, maybe it's like my one theory about when you have a lot of young people, it's like sometimes you ask your teenage son to go shovel the walk.
Yeah.
And one in three times he's going to do a great job. But, you know, when it comes to just dog work, heavy lifting,
yeah,
you know, boring, mundane, horrible shoveling the walk kind of work, teenagers aren't the best at that. They have their moments in life, but that's not it. So when I think there's sometimes like some of the hard nitty-gritty stuff these young guys have to learn a little bit more about and get better at.
I think if my wife were here, she'd say some of the older guys aren't great at it either, but
yeah, my wife.
Thank God they're not here. Hey David, thanks man.
Thanks Alan, bye-bye.
David Staples, and we recorded that interview before Pjärvi got sent out, obviously, but I think Magnus Pjärvi will do well in Oklahoma City, and one hopes that it'll be quite a while before he has to go back down again, or if ever, when he does get called up, and I imagine he'll be called up sometime in January. You know, the Oilers up front have had some injury problems, and on the blue line as well, but the problem is Timo Hartikainen and Linus Domark, two guys who could have been called up at any time and really may have had an impact based on their minor league numbers and their experience, are both hurt as well. So that's a consideration too. On the way, Kirk Ludeke from Redline Report. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 12:48. Coming up in the next hour, Cam Moon from the Red Deer Rebels, play-by-play guy and a good guy. Also play-by-play for Oklahoma City Barons, Jim Byers, and Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun will be by to talk to us as well. Very busy show, and we're delighted to welcome Kirk Ludeke from Redline Report in. Kirk, how are you this afternoon?
I'm great, Alan. How are you?
I'm well, except that I have some friends who are Flyers fans, so could you ask the Bruins to back off on the scoreboard and the hits and the temple shots?
Yeah, hey, old-time hockey, right? Ronaldo and Horton just went at it there a couple minutes ago, and if nothing else, the Flyers fans are certainly getting their money's worth today.
Well, the Bruins are my second favorite team, so I'm okay with it. But, you know, before we go on, Boston is they started slowly, but, man, they look like the defending Stanley Cup champions right now.
Yeah, they're pretty good, no doubt about it. And, you know, the thing is the organization isn't done. It was just scouting prep games over the weekend here and last couple days, and they had about six guys at the Avon class, Christmas Classic, looking at Buñuevas. So, you know, that's you know, you can't rest on your laurels. You still have to continue to build the organization, and they clearly recognize that. So that's a good sign for the future for Bruins fans.
Tell us a little bit about this kid. There's a little bit of a buzz going on about him at Avon Old Farms, I think. Is that what it's called?
Well, that was the venue he played for, Kent. Yeah, no, he's just a real, I mean, he's a 6'3 player who, you know, has a tremendous skating ability and is a real offensive talent. Another guy I saw this week of interest is Brian Hart of Phillips Exeter, although if you're from New England, it's Brian Hatt. Between Brian Hatt and Chris Kreider, they have the you know, Phillips Exeter and Andover have things pretty well covered there. So,
yeah, but are those all like Tom Pody came from Cushing Academy? There's Phillips Exeter, Avon. Are those all high school teams?
Yeah, they're prep schools, but yeah, they're high school kids and varying degrees. I mean, back in the old days when Jeremy Roenick was coming out of those ranks, Antonio Monte and you know, guys like that, It was considered a much higher level of competition, but junior leagues and demands of the area players elsewhere and other, you know, in major junior and things like that have kind of watered down the talent level. So it's kind of like the old box of chocolates effect. You never know what you're going to get when you go to a prep game. And what ends up happening is you have some real talented guys, but they're on some, you know, you're not seeing powerhouse teams. You know, you might see, you know, like, for example, in the Exeter game, Hart was really the only guy to see. The building was full of NHL scouts, but everyone was there to see him. And you, ideally, you know, you want to be at games where you're seeing more than, you know, one guy, you know, that you're hoping to project at the NHL level. So that's kind of the reality, but it is what it is, and you do the best you can, you know, with the region. And there are some good players. I wouldn't say there's high-end guys coming out. And, again, I have to defer to Kyle Woodleaf. You know, he's my boss, so I don't want to go too much into this. It's really his job to talk the draft guys. But, you know, there are some interesting players maybe in the you know, second rounds and middle rounds this year, a little more depth. Compared to last year, which was a pretty thin year overall for the area.
The scouting gig for Redline is giving you a chance to see some outstanding draft eligibles, which you saw in the past. But do you enjoy this side of it? Do you enjoy the scouting portion?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something I've always had a passion for and something I've always wanted to do. And, you know, I learn so much and try to, you know, it's funny. Every game I go to, I learn something new and try to pick up on different things. And, you know, it's a fun ride, but you know, you have to read the fine print. You know, you do get stuck in some pretty cold buildings watching some pretty low end hockey some nights.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're like me and you've seen your share of NHL games, sometimes that reality, you know, hits you upside the head pretty good.
One of the stories here in Edmonton or a surrounding area with regard to the World Juniors is Charlie Coyle and him leaving for the Q. We've heard his side of it because, you know, he's been interviewed because he's in Edmonton and area about, you know, he didn't want to talk about it too much, but rumors of his grades being bad were, you know, from what he said, were not the issue. Have you heard another side of it from the other side?
No, I really haven't. I mean, I think you always hear rumors, and at this point, what I've heard is not something that I really am in a position to come on and speculate about. You know, he made the decision, and obviously there's an upside for him to go to the Q because he's going to get that pro style schedule and he's going to play a lot more games. Plus Zach Phillips is on the Sea Dogs and they were playing together, I guess, at the development camp there over the summer in Minnesota. So, you know, this comes down to, I think, some personal choices on his part. And I'm sure there's a side of the story that'll come out from the team eventually, but I'm just going to let that happen. You know, heck of a player. I mean, he was my number one guy coming out of New England for the 2010 draft. So, you know, it's good to see him on Team USA, and I think his focus, rightfully so, is on the World Junior Tournament right now, and we'll just have to let the chips fall where they may when he finishes up and heads home and then off to the Maritimes from the sounds of it.
The Americans are always regarded as a strong contender, and this year no different. Cut down day, I think you guys is later about 22nd of December for the American team. How many difficult decisions do you think there'll be for Team USA, or is the team fairly set?
No, I think there's going to be some decisions. I mean, they have, you know, they brought a lot of quality guys. I think the way the USA works, though, is that, you know, they're more of a system-based team. So they tend to take guys that, number one, have been through in the program and are familiar with the system and have you know, paid their proverbial dues, so to speak. And so you're going to see the guys that were on the team last year. They're locks. And then you have some guys that weren't on the team last year, but it came through the National Team Development Program, and they have a very good chance of making the team. And then you have a few guys like your Connor Brickleys, for example, who he wasn't on the National Team Development Program, but he did play on the under-18 team that won gold in 2010. And so he's, again, familiar with what's expected of him. A guy like Austin Watson, same thing. And so even though they aren't – Ann Arbor products per se, they have played, represented USA internationally and had some success, and so they can play a specific role. I mean, a guy like Connor Brickley, he's not there to score points, but he's going to give him that gritty edge, in-your-face, tenacious forechecker type guy that I think they were lacking last year when they went up against Canada. And you got to have that, because Canada, on the other hand, Canada has such a strong pool to choose from, and they really bring their best, most talented guys. USA takes a slightly different approach, but it's worked for them. What can you say?
One area that I think the Americans have a great edge is goaltending. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And, it's a paradox, right? Because Jack Campbell's been so strong internationally. I mean, I think you could make the case that he might be the best international goalie of all time, just in terms of what he's accomplished. I mean, this is his third World Junior Championship. He's got a gold. He's got a bronze. He's got several golds in the under-18s. I mean, he's a tremendous guy, competitor, person. But he just hasn't enjoyed that same kind of success in the OHL. And it's kind of a head scratcher, 10th overall pick for the Stars, and such big things are expected of him in the OHL, and just hasn't come together. But boy, I watched him. I was in Buffalo last year, and he had been struggling in Windsor, yet he goes to the World Juniors, and it's like he flips a switch, and he's a whole nother player, and he brings it up a whole nother notch. So, and you know what, his backup, John Gibson, he's no slouch either. I mean, his misfortune is that he's only a year younger than Jack Campbell, because, I think that in all rights, Gibson's been quite good himself. He just doesn't have the opportunities to play at the World Junior level, at least, because he's got such a accomplished guy in front of him. But he's a similar kind of player in that the bigger the game is and the tougher the moment, he just maintains his calm and his poise, and he just finds a way to make that big save. And we saw that from him repeatedly last year in the under-18s in April. And I just can't say enough. I remember one NHL scout I was talking to about Gibson last year, and he said, you can't coach a player to have ice water in his veins, when the game's on the line. And that is an ability that a player either has or he doesn't. And Gibson has that. So, and I think he and Campbell both have it. And so that gives the U.S. a pretty sizable advantage going in.
Kirk, thanks for this so much, and we're going to have you back soon again.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me on. Take care.
All right. Kirk Ludeke from Redline Report, formerly a Bruins Draft Watch, and a really smart guy, and gives us great insight about an area of the world that is, it's a little ways away, but he has updated us over the last year or so with some great information, and we're very appreciative. It's 12:58. Coming up in the next hour, we've got Cam Moon from the Red Deer Rebels, Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun, and Jim Byers. We're going to check out the Oklahoma City Barons and Magnus Pajärvi. It's all coming up. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
All kinds of news to pass along. Kyle Turris has been traded to Ottawa by the Phoenix Coyotes for David Rundblad and a second-round pick. The Montreal Canadiens have fired Jacques Martin, and Randy Cunnyworth is the replacement. Timu Solani is in Winnipeg with the Anaheim Ducks, and that'll be a game tonight. And be interested to see the reaction. I bet they go nuts. There's just no way. Timu Solani is legendary in Winnipeg. That'll be a big day. And end of second, Boston 5, Philadelphia 0, and they probably have enough players to complete the game, but Sean Couturier is out after taking a slap shot to the temple. Unbelievable. That's let's see here now. That's who all do they have out right now as far as forwards are concerned? There's Couturier, there's Shen, he's also out, Giroux, and then, of course, Pronger, the defenseman. So, man, I tell you, Philadelphia Flyers fans are it's not looking good right now, but, it's a long way to the playoffs. Oilers play in San Jose tonight. That should be a very interesting game. Wood Guy tweets this: can you discuss Rennie moving Horkoff to center on the third line with 20 on the left wing? That's Belanger. The lines look like this: Nugent Hopkins with Hall and Eberle. That's a good line if you can do the soft parade and get the zone start right. In Edmonton, they've done very well, and specifically on the power play, the Nugent has been incredible. Sam Gagner is centering Ryan Smith and Alex Hemsky. They've had some good chemistry before. And then Horkoff between Belanger and Jones. I would think that'll be the hard minutes line, with the Gagner Smith-Hemsky line being the second toughest minutes, and then Eager and Hordachuk flanking Lander. That'll be the fourth line. Unlikely to see action if the game is close in the third period. The key, though, especially with the kids, is getting them matched up in a good way. And I don't know whether Tom Rennie turned it off early and then on later or what, but his line matching has not been either he's just rolling four lines during the first period and a half, or he's been being outmatched in the last several games, because it looks like those kids, especially on the road, are getting beaten up a little bit. And in the last game against Phoenix, every line was getting beaten. Now, should be a better effort tonight, but as far as I can see, that's going to be the hard line, the hard match checking line, that group. That's how I see it anyway for tonight. Going to be interesting as well. Haven't heard word yet that Habby Bunin is starting. He'd be the obvious choice if healthy. He's been off for several days now, and Dubnyk has been mediocre at best in the two outings, so he'd be the obvious choice for tonight. Now, coming up in this hour, we have Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun and Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons, but delighted to welcome back to the show from the Red Deer Rebels, play-by-play guy Cam Moon. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I've been waiting for this call because I remember talking to you in the summer and you saying, look, and you were the only one saying it, don't worry about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins' size. He'll be fine. So this is your opportunity to tell the world that you told us.
Hey, it's very rare I'm correct.
Well, you were spot on. You hit a home run on that one.
Well, I'm not overly shocked. After watching him for a couple of seasons and knowing his hockey IQ is right through the stratosphere and just the way he plays the game, size is just isn't much of an issue. He's an amazing player, an amazing person. Great to see him have the success that he's having. I hope it continues, and I hope the Oilers do well and move up the standings. So it's been a fantastic first part of the season for Ryan, for sure.
You know, he is almost, and I don't want to say historical, but Crosby aside, he's having the best rookie season since Yzerman, and on the power play, I don't recall a rookie having this kind of impact in the National Hockey League.
Well, and it's neat to see the Edmonton Oilers power plays now turned into the same power play that the Rebels had last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Give the puck to Ryan on the wall, and he'll figure out the rest. That's kind of how it was, and then that's what I'm starting to see now. I just let him take care of it. And it's amazing how he can find guys and even surprise guys with the puck.
Yeah, he has done that.
Yeah, I've seen it happen a few times in the National Hockey League, and it happened all the time here where there's no way he's going to get that pass through, and bang, it's right on the tape. I don't know how he does it.
It's crazy. We never compare him to he who shall not be named.
Right.
But he does see the ice in a very unique way, even at 18.
I know.
I watch him and I go, well, it's obvious now, but before he did it, nobody thought of that, you know?
Yeah. It's been a great run. And you look at it now, in hindsight, of course, 2020, but there was, you know, all the talk of the other guys that were available, and good on the Oilers for just taking the best guy and not worrying about position, because they clearly took the best guy.
Well, that's the thing that amazes me. I went back and I looked at the scouting reports, and God love them, they do a great job. The ones that you can purchase are the ones you can read online. And the Bob McKenzie one, which is basically, you know, everybody scouts who actually asked, and then he puts it into a report. And until the spring, it was not a fait accompli that Nugent Hopkins was going to be number one.
Yeah, and that's true. And you know what? I think that's fair, too. I think Ryan had a lot better second half last year than he did a first half. So, you know, I would say there's some validity to that, but he really did prove in the second half that his talent level and his awareness on the ice is incredible. I know Rebel scouts were talking about what a special player he was when he went first overall in the WHL Bantam draft. And you know, there was some debate there too. Ty Ratty was in that mix also. He landed up going to the Portland Warhawks and is an incredible player. I mean, he was in that mix also, but and I think will be a very good pro player down the line. But Ryan, you know, he showed it at the WHL level when he came in. that he could hit the ground running and have an impact, and he's doing it at the NHL level too. It's amazing.
Did you think he'd be this good this early?
No. I thought he would be good enough to play and would see some power play time, maybe not first power play time, and I guess play on the top couple lines, but I didn't think he'd have quite the impact he's having. I think it helps that you know, they bring in Ryan Smith. That's really worked out well too. And having that group of guys, he's really played well with Jordan Eberle. That's been an amazing fit. I didn't think he'd be quite this good. I'm happy that it is, because he's such a quality young man. I mean, really, he deserves the success because he works extremely hard at it and for it. But I didn't think he'd be this good this quick.
What kind of impact did him not going back to the Rebels have on that team?
Well, a huge one. He'd be one of the premier players in this league. But it was fairly expected. I mean, when he left, there weren't a lot of people around here that were going, oh, well, you know, Ryan will be back here in a month or so, and then we'll get going. I mean, everybody had a pretty good idea that when he left, the chances of him coming back were pretty slim. I mean, people on the inside anyway. Some fans most certainly may have thought that he was coming back. But, I mean, just following from a distance, of course, training camp, preseason, and then the start of the regular season, he just kept proving that he could make the next step. And it'd be great to have him back, sure, but when the guy goes first overall and is that good and can make that kind of impact, you wish him well. It looks good on the entire program here in Red Deer, and certainly that is exactly where he should be, and it's good to see.
You know, 10 games ago, the Central Division of the WHL was fairly tight with the Oil Kings, Kootenay, Medicine Hat, Calgary, and the Rebels in there, too. They've had a tough run here, though, like 1-9, I think it is, in the last 10. What's happened in the last 10 games that has really caused the Rebels maybe to fall off the pace a little with the Hitmen?
Oh, but you name it. You name it. Anything that could go wrong has gone wrong. Unbelievable. It started, the Rebels had a trip through B.C., and the team was on a roll. They had won 6 in a row. They dropped the last game in Victoria. And then they don't win another game for a month. Yeah. The team went 13 games without a victory. Franchise record, too, until they got a victory Tuesday in Cranbrook against the Kootenay Ice. They lost some key players. Adam Kambites is a 4-year player, a forward that played on the top line. He was out. John Persson, the New York Islander draft pick, was out for a little while. Aaron Barreco, who's an Edmonton guy, Southside Athletic Club graduate, he's still out of the lineup. Dalton Seawalk has been out of the lineup for almost a month. The Rebels lost some top-end guys, and with this team, it doesn't really have the big depth up front. They struggled. And then eventually, the goaltender, Patrick Bartoszak, who was ranked 3rd in the WHL by Central Scouting in the preliminary ranking, season-ending injury.
Yeah.
So it just, when it rained, it poured. The team's hoping to get some guys back here pretty soon. They did add another netminder, a 20-year-old goaltender named Devin Dubik, who had played the previous 3 seasons in the WHL. So he shored up that netminding issue. But just with guys getting hurt, and then there were some suspensions. Turner Elson, who signed a free agent deal with the Calgary Flames, he's a St. Albert guy. He got a 6-game suspension. He's a top-line guy. That didn't help either. Then they lost Matt Dumba and Alex Petrovic to the Canadian National Junior Team, so they missed a few games. When they get their guys back, I mean, it'll help, but the Rebels have dug themselves a hole. They're on the outside looking in on the top 8 to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a hard, long road back, and you know, hopefully it starts tonight. The Regina Pats are here. That's one of the teams they're chasing. So it's amazing. After a time where the team was 14-4-1,
yeah,
to see it now below 500, it's been quite a fall.
That said, the reports I'm getting, and this is from several different sources, is that this kid, Matt Dumba, is something else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he most certainly is. He brings an offensive flair to the game, shoots the puck really hard. He's got 11 goals this year already from the back end. Skates very fast, plays a lot bigger than he is. He's 6 foot, 175 pounds, but he plays like he's 6'4", 220. He's drilling guys. He's stepping up to make a hit. He's stepping up to make a play. He was devastated. He didn't make the Canadian national junior team. That was a real tough day for him. And then he had to play in Cranbrook that night. So that one was that was a tough day for Matt. But he's had an up and down year. I mean, he's had some incredible games where he shows that offensive flair and the physicality to his game. He's had some tough ones too, where there's times where he'll take chances to make things happen, and sometimes it does happen, but it's the other way. So there's that to his game too. So there's been some ups and downs, but his top end, I mean, it's really good.
Cameron texted this earlier, and I wanted to pass along to you, and obviously not the same physical kind of player, but he asked, is Dion Phaneuf a fair comparison for the type of defenseman Dumba projects to become?
Maybe. Matt isn't as big as Dion and probably won't get as big as Dion, so at the next level, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to play that same physical style against guys that are bigger and stronger. Maybe. But he skates well, shoots the puck well, and is dynamic. Will take chances to make things happen. Sometimes high risk, sometimes high reward. Maybe a little more PK Subban-like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I know that he has a tremendous impact on the power play just based on the numbers.
Yeah, oh yeah. Now, he's a big part of it. Him and Alex Petrovic, who's an Edmonton guy, Maple Leaf Athletic Club graduate, that those two guys are on the back end on the power play, and both are good at what they do. In a lot of ways, Alex is a guy that quarterbacks it, and Matt is a guy that takes the shot. He's got a tremendous one-timer, and a lot of times they set up for that shot, and Matt just flat-out can score goals.
Are you going to be checking out the World Juniors?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, that's what we do. That's what we do around here.
But
there's a couple of pre-tournament games in Red Deer, too, on Tuesday. It's the Americans and the Russians, and then on Thursday it's Canada and Switzerland. So at least we'll get a taste of it here, shades of 95.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, once it gets going with Calgary and Edmonton, yeah, I'll be glued to my television.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I used to live in Red Deer years ago, and the great thing is if you're between the two cities, so if there's something major, like a gold medal game involving Canada, it's an hour and a half as opposed to 3 hours, right?
Yeah, it is a beautiful thing that way.
Yeah, no, it is for sure. All right. Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it very much, Cam.
Hey, anytime. Don't forget about me here.
I promise I won't.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon.
Cam Moon, Red Deer Rebels play-by-play guy. He's in action tonight. Of course, the Oil Kings are in action as well this evening, too, right here on Team 1260 Radio. I should mention that very busy Western Hockey League schedule. He mentioned that Rebels are at home tonight against Regina. That'll be an interesting game. Brandon Davidson is one of the Edmonton Oiler prospects. And, of course, Calgary playing here against the Edmonton Oil Kings. And it's tonight is tonight the teddy bear toss? So are you going tonight? Are you going to be...
I'm quite excited for the teddy bear toss. I was speaking with Corey last night, Corey
yes.
Graham, and he said, no one has ever hit the ice from the broadcast booth with a teddy bear.
Wow.
I'm going to break that streak.
Well...
tonight.
So are you lefty or righty?
I'm a righty.
Okay.
I've been warming up in the pen all morning.
Right. You need the big windup, though. That's the...
I'm a closer, Alan. I come in for three innings, and I give you heat for three innings, but that's it.
I want an update next Saturday. This is from Helene Elliott. Helen, not Helen, on the Twitter site. Daryl Sutter has been hired as the Kings' next coach and will take over on Tuesday. Wow. You know, usually NHL teams or baseball teams, when they've got a hard bleep kind of coach who gives no quarter, they'll replace him with somebody who's a little more of a soft touch, a little more of a player's coach or manager. The LA Kings are going from Terry Murray, who's the toughest screw to ever walk a turn at Shawshank, to Daryl Sutter, who would eat him for breakfast. So that's going to be an interesting time in Los Angeles with the Kings. They're going to be, they'll make it to the playoffs, but there might not be much left after Sutter takes over in Los Angeles. What a busy day. We've got more to come right here. Stay tuned. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 125. This is Nation Radio. We're around till 2 o'clock today, so thanks so much for tuning in. And now we go to the hardest working man in show business, Terry Jones. How are you, bud?
Not too bad, actually. I'm just sitting under Cascade Mountain, so my cell phone is in range and ready to do it. Just got out of the rink 5 minutes ago.
How do they look?
Well, it's a practice.
Yeah.
I've watched too many practices. They're all the same.
Well, they're all upright, though, right? They're all skating.
Yeah, no, today was a good day again. There was an incident yesterday with Mark Scheifele that looked a little serious for a moment or two there. He went into the boards a couple times. And the second one, he came up looking like he might have wrecked a wrist or something like that, but it was he had a stick into the sternum there that completely took his wind away, and and it took a while for him to recover there, but he was back out before the day and he was fine today.
How many World Juniors have you covered over the years?
I haven't kept track, but just about everyone in Canada except Ottawa, I think.
Okay, you know what? I forgot. I haven't had an opportunity to do this yet, but congratulations on the Hockey Hall of Fame honor. I congratulated you earlier. Now you went and went through the process. What was it like for you, Terry?
Well, until I just about fell on the ice.
Oh, yeah.
The park. It was wonderful. you noticed they put a new carpet in there. You know,
the next night they had a new one.
Aware of it. The Oilers honored me. After I got back from the Grey Cup and had a nice little luncheon for me with some speeches and a great gift of an old seat from the upper deck, you know, where they replaced the seats from Rexall Place with an inscription that was really terrific, but included the words, "Weak Need Wimps." If you're old enough, you know that story.
Yep, absolutely.
And, but then part of the deal was to go out on the ice and drop the ceremonial puck. And this year, the Oilers went back to their original 21 colors, as I put it, and they put a new carpet in there that the anthem singer Samantha King told me, be really careful. I've almost gone down three times this year, she said, and so I was really careful going all the way out to. But then I got out there and I threw a one-liner at Sean Horkoff, and all of a sudden my balance is going, and then now the carpet's moving around, and I stuck the landing. Next day, Grant Fuhr was next game. Grant Fuhr was selected to be the official ceremonial puck dropper for the night that they had those that sweater giveaway promotion. And I noticed the old carpet's been back.
Yeah, since. Right. That was the last one. They retired it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they sent it back to get some stuff on the bottom of it.
There you go.
Stick.
Hey, I follow you and your son on Twitter, and based on the play-by-play during the Hockey Hall of Fame weekend, I think you owe him a nice Christmas gift.
Well, the deal was is that I made him my official Twitterer because, you know, it just wasn't an appropriate place to be sitting. And he's had a lot of fun to it. In case people don't know, Shane is my son's name, and he covers the games for Canadian press, both the Oilers, the Eskimos, and the Edmonton Rush, and also is the sports editor out in the Sherwood Park News. So he's in the business and has been for a while. And after a radio career at CHQT and Kissin and brief television career over in Saskatoon after getting out of Nate there, so I convinced him he had to go on Twitter about 2 or 3 months ago, because essentially, and if you're listening and aren't on Twitter and you're a big hockey fan or whatever sports fan, it's become a wire service.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to follow the right people to know what's going on. People think of it, and the dinosaur that I am, that's the way I thought of it. Well, I just don't want to be tweeting all the time. But even if you don't engage in that part of it at all, you follow the right 150 people or whatever, and you wouldn't believe how up to date you're going to be in whatever your interest is.
In the last 90 minutes, Terry, since this show started, I got the tourist trade to Ottawa from Phoenix for Rundblad and a second round pick. Sutter's been not named, but he's agreed to the coaching job in Los Angeles, and all kinds of injuries with Couturier, the puck to the head in Philadelphia, the game against Boston. So you're right. It's an absolute source of information.
Yeah. And, you know, and this morning, of course, you wake up and find out that Jacques Martin has been fired in Montreal. And, you know, you can, it's possible to blissfully go around for hours without knowing this stuff, but you can't anymore. And that's great.
Nope. Yeah.
You're tagged right in, especially in a business like we have. It's, and then you might make the discovery, as I did, that this stupid exercise can be fun.
I
see you're enjoying it now, too.
I am. You know what? The funny thing is that the reason I got onto it was because you were on it, and I thought, well, damn it. You know, Terry Jones, for crying out loud. It can't be that difficult. You know, you were an inspiration to me.
Oh.
I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. What?
I don't know.
What's
wrong? Compliments before.
What's wrong with that? And this is a loaded question, but the Oilers in the first 15 or so games, they played so well, and maybe we all knew they were going to come back to earth, but it's been about 15 miles of bad road the last 15 games or so. Can we put our finger on it, or is it a combination of injuries and uneven performance from the youngsters?
Well, no, I think you can put your finger on it in a lot of ways. The goaltending was outstanding in the front end, and not quite so much ever since. I think you start there. The defense played, and I realize it's more of a team defense than defense, but I mean, we had major questions about the defense going into the season, and that group played pretty well to start the season. Mm-hmm. And now they're kind of looking like we expected them to. Then a few injuries come along, and you know, some of the players that, I mean, who expected Piarvi to, you know, be a point per game player plus at this stage of this deep into the I'm sorry, Nugent Hopkins, did I say Piarvi? I got him on the mind.
There you go. We're going to talk about him in a sec.
Who expected him, and who expected Piarvi to be down in the minor leagues? I think the biggest single thing that seems to be wrong with this hockey team right now is Alex Hemsky's become a square peg trying to go into a round hole here. Mm-hmm. And that has, you know, to do with, you know, a string of injuries he's had, being in his contract year, going from being the best player in the face of the franchise to, you know, he's got three kids in Hall, Eberle, and the Nuge, plus Ryan Smith coming back, have diminished his status considerably. And he's just playing the kind of hockey that doesn't justify him playing on those first two lines. And he's got to be a top six player with, you know, the way he turns the puck over and stuff. So I think that's the biggest single thing the Oilers have to do right now to determine the direction they go, is to determine what they're going to do about Alex Hemsky. And they've got about 2 days here before the holiday freeze. And I don't quite frankly know if you can get anything for him at this stage.
That's what was my next question, is if you're Steve Tambellini, signing him, I mean, what would you sign him to? You know, he's obviously a free agent in the summer. You can wait till the deadline and hope that he improves. But this is a player who's had a major impact on the city. He's obviously a capable player and a player ordinarily lots of teams would look for. But, you know, his value can't be high right now.
No, and it is he's unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, and you know it's possible that you could have him back here even if you made that choice, because I don't see him getting any offers that are going to be any greater than what he's making, and probably significantly less. But you'd have to make a philosophical determination here too, because I mean, look. Just take the case of Sam Gagner. When he was playing on that first line during the absence of Taylor Hall, he got it going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he looked like he belonged up there, and he was making it. I just think he's got to be in the top two lines to be effective.
Yeah.
The struggles that Piarvi's having this year, isn't he kind of one of those players too? So.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to decide where you're going forward, and where Alex fits into that, and if you can get a defenseman for him. Like last year, I was all over the case saying, you know, get rid of Penner, but keep Hemsky because he's your best player. Well, I can't make that argument anymore about Hemsky is not your best player.
No, it's true. Coach Tom, there's so many coaches in the NHL losing their jobs and being hired for jobs. Tom Rennie is up at the end of the year. I can't imagine that they'll let him go. I imagine they'll sign him. But is this 15-game period, is that going to be more difficult for Tom Rennie to go in and negotiate a contract here? Or is he a guy that they're definitely devoted to over the next few years?
Well, he's the perfect guy for the front end of this, of what we've been dealing with here, because he's a teacher and he has just unbelievable patience and has a way about him that relates to kids. That I think goes back to his national team experience, and I think it's been a good fit to this point.
Mm-hmm.
But just about every NHL coach out there is entirely defense first. And the more I watch this team, I'm wanting to see a philosophy that's beginning to change a little bit to spending a lot more time in the offensive end of the ice, at the expense occasionally of giving up a chance or five going back the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Just because for this team to win right now, I think their best chance is to have a large number of power plays, because that's where their strength is right now, especially on the road when teams can have that last change against Nugent Hopkins and the boys. So basically, the best way to get a power play is to put pressure on the other end, and I think the team has got to be start has to be coached in that direction. I get what they're doing. I mean, teach these kids complete 200 foot, 180 foot responsibilities, and turn them into complete pros, so that you can go forward and make those jumps later on. But I'm getting kind of antsy to see some of that now.
Yeah. Have you seen the lines for tonight? Horkoff's moved to the wing on a line with Bélanger. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I can't picture that.
Well, here's the lines. The kid line together, Nugent Hopkins with Hall and Eberle, Gagner with Smith and Hemsky, and then the third line, which will be the tough minutes line, Bélanger centering Jones and Horkoff.
Okay, I want to see that.
Yeah, that was my reaction too. I keep thinking that it's a mistake or it'll be broken up, but I think maybe it's just a matter of.
No, let me get this straight. You got one guy on the team. Well, you got two guys on the team that can successfully negotiate a face-off, and they're both on the same line, and one's playing out of position.
You got it.
Okay.
Well, you know what? Your reaction is the same as mine, so we're on the same page. I like that. Okay, one final one. The most famous demotion in Oilers history is probably the Mark Messier late for the airplane demotion. Did you cover that?
Yes and no. I was the columnist at the time. I believe that was back in my journal days, and I believe Jim Matheson took that road trip. So, I mean, you're talking about one guy on one end and one guy on the other.
Yeah.
Because, the team and the plane. And that was – people have to understand that that was back when the city center airport was you could take a lot of flights out of there in different directions. And that team had been going back and forth from one airport to the other on different road trips from – And we're not talking in the charter days. Like, for example, if you're taking a flight to Calgary, you were always flying out of the Muni, as we called it back then. But there are also other flights you could get out of there. And Mark actually went to the wrong airport, or at least that was his story. Might have been leaning a little bit to the story. But I think he got to that airport, and then he realized his mistake and didn't have time to get to the other airport.
That's right.
He was behind. But... Mark was at that stage of his career was a wild kid that was going to try everything twice, and he was quite a study in slats, and Glenn Sather enjoyed the heck out of him, but you got to set examples here and there, and so he got sent down to the minor leagues.
Yeah, and he was there for not long and came back, and, well, the rest is history, right?
And became the greatest leader in history of hockey and possibly sports.
Yep, and believe it or not, my all-time favorite Oiler. What a player. Absolutely. Hey, Terry, thanks for this. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I'll start moving the car here and get my eyes off that mountain. It's gorgeous.
All right, that's Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun, and sometimes I think we in Edmonton forget the amount of information from a Jim Matheson or a Terry Jones that's readily available. I put him on the spot, as I do with all our guests, with the questions about Mark Messier, and that is a 1979 question. Okay, that's how long ago it was, 1979, that Mark Messier got sent out. And I had forgotten about the two airport thing, and he remembered that. Remember the whole darn deal. Good job, Terry Jones. We appreciate that very much. Now, we have one more guest on a very jam-packed day. It's 1:40, 20 before 2. Please stay tuned, because Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons is going to talk to us a little bit about Magnus Pajärvi and about some of the injuries and about a team that is really doing well. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
1:45. Don't forget Jungle Jim Hunter coming up at 2 o'clock with his show. And later on today, of course, it's, you know what? There's an Oil King game tonight, as a matter of fact. They'll be playing the Calgary Hitmen. We'll tell you more about that as well. As Jeff Crichel will be around at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Jam-packed afternoon. This comes in from Amir Oblansky talking about Swedes, saying that now that Pajärvi is in Oklahoma City, why not send down Lander and play him with Pajärvi and Omark when he returns? Sending Lander down would no doubt build his confidence and some chemistry between the Swedes, which have we've seen glimpses of in the past. What is your opinion of Lander versus O'Mara with the Oil? Well, I think the Oilers like Lander more. That's obvious because he's been here all season. But O'Mara is a physical player, and as time goes on, if Lander is unable to provide or help provide offense on that fourth line, that might be a consideration for him to be sent out. But as of right now, Anton Lander, I mean, he's been in the National Hockey League for, you know, not quite half a season, and there's been no signs that I've heard of the Oilers even thinking about sending him down to Oklahoma City. Speaking of Oklahoma City and the Barons, Jim Byers joins us now. Jim, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm well. Well, let's start with Pajärvi being sent out. He handled it very well up here. How has he, or have you heard how he's handled it down there, and will he play in Houston tonight?
Well, we are playing the Houston Aeros tonight. It is a home game.
Okay.
He came directly here. I must admit, I did not go down for the morning skate today. I had some other things to do, so I have not been able to see him actually interact with the team yet, but he is expected to play tonight, and I would assume it's going pretty well. I mean, his public statements have been that way, so we'll see how the on-ice chemistry works coming up here in a few hours.
Speaking of which, I know the Barons have been flying, so breaking up a line doesn't seem like a good idea, but with Pajärvi coming down, he's likely to get some big-time minutes. Any idea about who he might play with?
Well, you know, I really wish now I had been to that morning skate, because I really don't know. I would guess, and this is totally a guess, but the part of it depends on who's available to play and who isn't. Gilbert Brulé's missed a couple of games with a lower body injury. He'll probably be back tonight, I would think. But I would imagine that they would probably slide, slide Pajärvi on a line with Ryan Keller and Mark Arcabello, with Arcabello in the middle. That's a spot where the left wing has been Philippe Cornet. Cornet got checked a week ago last night and hasn't played since, and he is not due to play tonight. So I would think that's ostensibly the number one line, so I would think that's probably where Pajärvi would go.
Okay, and the Cornet, you know, he has played so well up to this, a little disappointing that he's been hurt, but here's a guy who we don't hear about much. The organization doesn't talk about Cornet a whole lot, but he really has been outstanding for the Barons.
Yes, he has. I mean, he's basically a younger version of this year's Colin McDonald, with a little less exposure than McDonald had coming into last year. I mean, a guy who had been a pretty solid type organizational player through Cornet's 1 year in the system last year and the previous years that McDonald had been here heading into last season. But like McDonald, Cornet has really come alive this year offensively. Neither one of those guys set up very many goals. Cornet only has 3 assists, but he scored 15, which is among the league leaders. And a guy that worked very hard on the offseason to get just a little quicker, maybe get a step quicker. Both guys are in superb shape. You know, you could probably draw a few comparisons between the two as far as their willingness to go to kind of the high traffic, you know, greasier areas. And so that's kind of, it's been nice that both years the Oilers Club has been here at Edmonton, that they've produced sort of a breakout guy who started to gain some attention. And in the case of Cornet, it's a guy who's a few years younger than McDonald was.
Yeah, for sure. And he's certainly a prospect. Among the rookies, the AHL rookies, and that's, I think, Tremblay, Lowry, Pitlick, Hamilton, House, Tulipov. If I forgot anybody, I know you'll know. Who has had the biggest impact from that group of newcomers?
Well, you know, to this point in the year, I'd probably say Hunter Tremblay, perhaps. I think he's, you know, he's played very well on the penalty kill. He's always usually, well, generally the first guy out there, along with Ryan O'Mara on the penalty kill. Tanner House has come on strongly of late. Tanner's play was a little quiet earlier in the year, but both those guys have made huge impact. You know, we've seen 8 points out of Tyler Pitlick so far, but he's just a young guy. I think he just needs a little bit of time. I think he'll be fine. I think so far as a guy who's day in, day out, been a huge contributor, I think Tremblay really has. Three of his 4 goals have been shorthanded, which one of them was an empty net shorthanded goal, but still they all count. He leads the league in shorthanded goals, but his penalty killing has been very effective, and Tremblay's turned into a nice two-way kind of grinding winger.
Colton Tubert is a guy who Edmonton Oilers fans are growing to love. You know, when he got sent out this past time, there was a lot of grumbling that he didn't deserve to be demoted. Does he really play very well in Oklahoma City as well?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that people just are gravitate toward him because of his physical play and his size and all of that and his willingness to do things that not everybody is willing to do. But he's been a pretty instant fan favorite down here since the day he got here last season in the trade. And I must say, Tulipov has kind of become a little bit of a folk hero down here. I mean, he's a very personable guy. And Tulipov, like Tubert, being big guys who'll pay the price, they're popular, you know. But, yeah, Tubert's been outstanding. I mean, he's all due respect to some of the other D-men like Alex Plante, who's come on and had a very strong year down here in Shawnee, who's a very strong player at the AHL level. You know, Tubert steps in and immediately becomes a huge factor on defense for the Barons.
How about this Lowry guy? We don't know a lot about him. We saw him at training camp a little bit, but he seems to be a guy who's sliding into the top six more often than not.
Sure, and he's played a lot with Brian Helmer this year, and I think that's kind of been a steadying influence. Lowry moves the puck pretty well. He's a good skater, not particularly large, but is a guy that, you know, has a sturdy enough body that he can withstand the pounding. And he is a guy, too, that was off the radar pretty much prior to the season. But playing on a really good Colorado College team that we see. In fact, we'll see 2 or 3 guys off that same Colorado College team tonight with the Minnesota Wilds affiliate from Houston that the Barons are taking on. And the guys by the name of Chad Rao and Chris Fredheim, principal among them, who are 2 key guys for the Wilds AHL club. But now that obviously had to be a pretty good Colorado College team, because Lowry might not have been one of the more high-profile guys off that club, and yet he has been a pretty solid top six guy. It has been a healthy scratch a couple of times, but that's mainly just because we've had a lot of D-men here at various times.
We just got confirmation maybe an hour or so ago that Nikolai Habibulin will start for the Oilers tonight, but Olivier Waugh had been called up to Oklahoma City. Jan Denis is the starter there. How has he been playing?
He's been playing fine. You know, it's kind of been a play, and it's sort of been an alternate goaltending rotation here. Denis' numbers the last month or so have not been quite as good as David Lemieux's, but they pretty much shared time. And I think the reason for that is not because of the way Denis played. It's just been the way the teams played around him, kind of like a pitcher that doesn't get the run support. You know, when Denis has played of late, they haven't played quite as well around him, so some of his goals allowed totals have been a little higher. But, you know, to me, you really haven't – it's been hard to split Lemieux and Denis. Denis did come in the Barons' last game on Tuesday in relief of Lemieux after the first period. Barons were down 3-0, lost 3-2. Jan did not allow any goals. There's a word going out, and I haven't independently confirmed it, but it's been out on Twitter that Denis' wife is about to have a baby, so – that really is the reason that Waugh was summoned from Stockton. I'm sure we'll get that officially tonight. But people were wondering why they're adding a third goalie up here, which historically we have not had. It's because of that.
Okay. The one final question for you, that West Division, Oklahoma City, Houston, and Abbotsford, that is a tight race.
Yeah, top three teams in the league by just about any measure. If you look at standing point percentage, wins, the Barons and Abbotsford have 19 wins. Houston has the most standing points in the league. They only have 16 wins, but they picked up standing points almost every game. They have 40 points. The Barons and the Heat have 39 each, and those are the top three records in the league. So right now the Western Division has been very dominant, and even San Antonio and Texas, who are down at the bottom of the division, I think would be reasonably strong in a couple of the other divisions that we've seen. It's just the luck of the draw, and we'll see how it goes with player transactions at this level. Teams' fortunes can change week to week, but no question. I mean, there's good goaltending in this division. Leland Irving, who's gone up to Calgary, at least he had been until recently, and I believe still is, was Abbotsford's goaltender, and then Matt Hackett, who just had a tour with Minnesota, has been Houston's number one goalie, and they've both been relying on one goalie primarily, whereas the Barons have had two. So Barons have the depth and goaltending edge, but there's good goaltending in the upper part of this division, and pretty deep clubs, all three of them. It's a pretty good battle when these Western teams get together.
Jim, thanks so much for this. Have a great great night tonight, and we'll be listening.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay, that's Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons. Thank you so much to Jim and all of my guests today, Terry Jones, Cam Moon, Kirk Ludeke from the Red Line Report. We talked to David Staples and Bruce McCurdy from the Edmonton Journal as well. Hey, you know what, ladies and gentlemen? We're on next Saturday from noon until 2 as well. That'll be our special World Junior Preview show. We talked a little bit about it today. We'll go more in depth, and we'll have Jonathan Willis as an in-studio guest next week as well. Have a great weekend. Stay tuned. Jungle Jim Hunter Show. We also got my friend Jeff Crichel on, and the game tonight, Edmonton Oil Kings, once again in action against the Calgary Hitmen. Have a great weekend, and happy holidays.